Bot Radio.
Central Park is bracing for a crowd of well-wishers today, when the President of the United States will present a special commendation. The Avengers are loved and respected around the world for their work against international terrorism and crimes of mass destruction.
But it's something that you need to understand, that all of these wars and assassinations that we're told are crazed, alone nut assassins, or weapons of mass destruction, or bringing democracy, all of them track back to the private central bankers as the initiating event.
Lockheed Martin recognized that this technically ambitious aircraft would only be profitable if enough was sold to keep the price down. Its sales machine went into overdrive.
The F-35 Joint Strike Fighter is a highly diversified fifth-generation tactical aircraft designed to excel in the air interdiction environment.
Hi folks, it's Martin here. This is a special episode of Kaput Radio involving a more in-depth look at war economy, their necessity and background. It is of course a talk about the finance method we're all subjected to. For details about the referred finance method, check out Kaput Radio number 244, available at radioforall.net. My friend Graham, a man who experienced three massive recessions in his life, has investigated capitalism and its principal sentinel, debt finance, for a long time. He will talk later to us. By the way, socialism, communism and other hybrids were also using the same method for finance, and it was futile there too. Graham recently created his own blog site and published an article we are referring to. Our friend Tanya has recorded Graham's article for our convenience. Thank you, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya. Great you came. And can you tell us what Graham actually written on his new blog?
For sure. Give peace a chance, a noble sentiment. But war happens to be a vital component of our economic activity. Profit from the armaments industry is essential to the success of any arms-producing economy. Once a country has become established and successful arms producer, it tends to become income-dependent on export sales of the product. The armaments industry produces much more than Swiss Army knives. Certainly, they make all types of guns and ammunition, but there are missiles, fighter and transport-type planes, ships, patrol boats, submarines, tanks, and any army land transport. All this with backing equipment and support systems. And of course there is the ubiquitous landmine. It's a great seller. I'm uncertain as to whether they come with a choice of prosthetic limbs as optional extras. Certainly they are not cheap. They cost an arm and a leg, if not more. So unfortunately, within the restraints of our present method of creating our finance, which requires that profit be made out of it, thus causing the world's greatest and maybe its only real scarcity, there's no economic possibility of giving global peace a chance, no peace in our time or in any other. We adopted our basic method of creating finance a little over 300 years ago, and it's this model that energizes and shapes not only the world's economy today, but with it our much-touted human activity. Science clearly shows us that this is bringing about radical and probably irreversible and most unwelcome climate change. But to survive economically, profit must come before any other consideration, either in our environmental or social health. Our one and only global method of creating finance, i.e. bringing money into existence, is more than somewhat curious. It produces our money at a financial cost and is loaned to the borrower. The borrower now must make a profit to cover the cost of this exercise and repay the loan. All money is created as a loan at cost. This financial cost must be paid and the principal loan returned. So between loan price and profit, there is a never-ending shortfall of funds which must be replaced, ultimately through more method-created loans, as in overdrafts that can be turned into profit, etc. Ask any treasurer or CEO. It is within this finance model, this method of monetary creation that demands, because of its inbuilt scarcity factor, that we survive by using our most primal response mechanisms and unsustainable practices against each other. The using of our limbic brain's reptilian responses for social and environmental interaction is not negotiable. It has become, in our world of dire financial scarcity, our only means of survival, albeit at a primitive level. The preservation instinct of self and family unit or group is our highest aspiration at this basic level. This model initiates and demands for the survival of the economy that we endure because of the funding scarcity, the polluting production methods that fuel our Western economy's lifestyle. It's a culture which is based on ever-increasing consumption. Today, the globally unsustainable human activity of rampant expansion is essential to a profitable, i.e. successful, economy. This economic growth factor is imposed by and kept within the well-defined parameters set by the method. Big industrial and manufacturing nations like the USA, Britain and France are heavily dependent, because of the method, on the export of armaments, not just for economic prosperity, but actually for their economic existence. The removal of this arms manufacturing industry would rush the fragile Western economy not only toward, but over, the fiscal cliff and into the economic disaster of global monetary depression. Export sales of armament are more easily achieved in third world nation states that are fearful of their rivals competing for export market share. They are led to believe that they should protect their national integrity through a show of armed force. That essential state of fear is achieved through a judicious use of media and agent provocateurs. That alone raises the desire for the feel of security that armaments falsely bring. A perception in the Middle East of threat, think of Libya or Syria, fear must first be fostered in these countries, targeted for potential arms sales by the arms industry. Certainly, in the poorer nations, a grim perception of their national leaders or their neighbour as enemy and rival is easily fostered. Amid the distress and poverty of third world economies, and triggered by that global scarcity of finance plus a little media psychological manipulation in the marketplace, eventually produces the desired conflict and sale of arms. In industrialised nations such as Russia, Germany and China, sales in arms make up a large component of their national economy. Germany, I've heard, quoted as high as 30%. Worldwide, armaments, their servicing, maintenance and component parts manufacturing are and have been such a massive industry that it could well have become the keystone of our first world's economic structure. Arms sales in most industrialised nations are such a large component of their financial income that without these, our economies are at risk. A war somewhere, anywhere, is more than just a fiscal stimulus of last resort to these nations. It's an economic essential of first recourse, regardless of the cost and destruction of foreign infrastructure, fear, and the tragic civilian death and industry. Advice to the curious. As so-called civilized beings, ain't it just awful what we do to each other and our environment? But for heaven's sake, never for a moment look at the financial cause that drives our activities, because you may be appalled. Don't even consider the possibility of such causal factors existing. It may bring an awareness of your own complicity and force you to refrain from whining about the horrific consequences about to befall us and the blaming of all of those others. Hard to absolve yourself when you support it just by living in and being provisioned by it, without ever once questioning to see if there's a rational cause, a reason, as to why we must destroy in order to consume, to survive. Just imagine being able to relax and stop bemoaning the fate awaiting society and the environment. We all share the responsibility of living, and having lived under an imperative commanded by a method of money creation that we arbitrarily installed all those years ago. One that demands for our economic survival our indefensible human activity. Philosopher Ayn Rand in 1961 in For the New Intellectual says, "Everybody seems to agree that civilization is facing a crisis, but nobody cares to define its nature, to discover its cause, and to assume the responsibility of formulating a solution." I paraphrase her next statement, but in economic terms. If today we ask our public intellectuals for solutions and guidance, we find that their answers are a hodgepodge, a sticky puddle of stale syrup, benevolent bromides, and generalities about brother love and global economic expansion and growth bringing universal prosperity. To explain, our globally accepted economy requires of an individual, a business, an industry, or a nation to prioritize its product's value. The universal all-time number one product in value and importance is the commodity we call profit, not food or water or shelter or humans. The manufacturing of goods or services play only a secondary role to profit and are merely offered as trading lures for potential profit-making. The food manufacturing industry is not in business to supply our food needs. It is in business to create an entirely other product. A nice person just doesn't one day think people need food, clothing and shelter, I'll produce some for them. No, in business the profit product must come first. Without profit there can be no business, no trade and no access to the products of industry. So some, nay too many, go hungry in this world of scarce finance. A prostitute is not in business to supply sex. The motive is the same as in any other business, including banking. Profit stands supreme, our world's number one most important product. If profit is not or cannot be achieved and the goods and services that have been created by industry become worthless as they cannot be accessed without money from profit, even if they are sorely needed. You can't make profit, you go hungry. Financial profit alone gives us access to goods and services. No money, no profit means no access to anything. In the wider economy, goods can be bought with, but cannot be owned by the borrower. They belong to the lender till the loan is repaid, as well as costs. Banks legally chartered by a 1694 Act of British Parliament can create finance from a customer's assets. They offer financial products in the hope of making profit, as does any other business. Both lender and borrower, the two human elements that bring new money into existence, must be able to profit or they cease to be viable. To explain the process, the borrower, in expectation of profit, presents an existing asset or a viable idea as an asset to the banker, who, in the expectation of profit, creates and lends the finance product based on the value of the customer's security, i.e. earning ability that will enable the servicing of the loan. However, in the wider financial scheme of things economic, the armaments for export are merely a product. They are merely a vehicle carrying the potential for making the far more crucial profit product. As the purchasing power within any nation's domestic market cannot match the financial cost of local production, so profitable export sales become a must-have economic component. Certainly, in Third World and other non-arms producing countries, the grim perception of the neighbour as enemy and competitor is easily fostered. It is our present methodology of money creation that has our large economies dependent on war and exploitation. The armed conflict for the armament-producing nations means a rapid rise in export sales, helping to maintain our Western living standards. Such is the nature of our finance model that no domestic market alone is able to support its local industries. Economic viability is essential to our standard of living. Our well-being, our economy, and our standard of living, pathetic as they presently are, cannot be compared to the standard of which we are capable of producing. Because, domestically, we're entirely reliant on and restricted by the requirements of profitable export sales. In other words, all businesses, including government, are primarily concerned with profit and living standards become a poor second. At home, the arms race and the refurbishing of armaments have been an important economic survival factor. A domestic market's essential fiscal stimulus. Air Force, naval and land forces equipment manufacturing support innumerable ancillary industries in the domestic marketplace. Export profit from war is as essential to our short-term economic survival as any other export profit. In a world run by financial scarcity, no large first world arms industry can afford to lose such a massive theatre of economic activity as war and its resultant arms sales. Economic survival requires profit. Profit requires exploitation. Profit for large armament-producing nations requires war. They are symptomatic.
Okay, thank you, Tanya. That was the article, which can be found at o2hec.wordpress.com.au. o2hec.wordpress.com.au. All in small letters. In order to find this site, you may need to enter this new URL into the address bar in your browser, since the search engines haven't been informed about the new existence yet. Coming up next, Graham talking more specifically about some points after this David Rovick track, Meanwhile in Afghanistan.
To articulate their message and together make a toast to the new schemes they're hatching, to the next regime they'll change, to the next nation they'll turn into a bombing range. They hyped it on the radio, newspapers and TV, the anarchists who come and destroy the city. The anarchists who come and the undercover cops, the old Chicago Red Squad and their psyops. It's the cops who bought the petrol, the cops who bought the cans, the cops who brought it home, the cops who made the plan, so they got the terrorists they wanted. Now they're doing fine, they got the terrorists and they got the headlines. I wanna know who, I wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Meanwhile in Afghanistan another family is dead, wiped out in their sleep as they were lying in their bed, wiped out of existence like so many are each day. This is liberation, so they say. This is liberation, and in case you are unsure, the NSA will tell you if your thoughts might be impure. While the generals fly their air force all the way across the ocean, they'll build military bases, drop bombs of all description. But if you drive from Florida to the city of Chicago to pay a little visit to Mayor Rambo, watch out for the cops who bring home the gasoline and your apartment becomes a crime scene. I wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Meanwhile in Afghanistan a village has been hit, a wedding party transformed into a pit, transformed into a graveyard for children, women, men, transformed into a graveyard for empire again, a place where terrorists are born with every drone attack, a graveyard for the Midwest boys never coming back, a graveyard for society, a graveyard for ideals, a place to bury all the hearts of anyone who feels them. At the meeting in Chicago, they'll talk of women's rights, they'll talk about the terrorists they've got within their sights, the terrorists abroad, the terrorists so near, the terrorists who grew up in a suburb around here. I wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Meanwhile in Afghanistan more protesters shot down by NATO troops who had to prove it's them who run this town, by NATO troops who have to show they are in control while it all comes crashing down in the countries they stole. NATO troops committing war crimes every day, over nations in the old imperial way. The lying generals in Chicago with their satellites and tanks, taking orders from their bosses, the oil men and banks, taking orders from their bosses, looking suitably enraged at terror, foreign and domestic, real or staged, whether led on by informants or just pissed off by the war. The terrorists are meeting behind closed doors. I wanna know who, wanna know who, who is the terrorist? Wanna know who, Graham, welcome to the show. Before you talk about the blog article, which will be mentioned and stated on the website afterwards, can you please speak about the often misconceived ideas about survival in this world, especially regarding money?
Well, you've got to come to money, of course, but survival means different things to different people. While the type of survival I'm talking about, or would like people to be talking about, would be sustainable survival. And it might seem like a oxymoron, but what we have at the present moment is, and what you're talking about, is survival in the short term. Now, to have long-term survival, of course, we've got to survive in the short term, obviously. So to get around to the money part of it, it is the only thing necessary under this present system that gives us access to food, to clothing, to the necessities of life. It is the only thing that it will give you access to any of our production and services or services.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just sort of throw this in. It's often stated, oh, I can survive with the soup kitchen and we can build a co-op and a little farm, and particularly amongst the local hippie circles, this sort of aberrant idea circulating quite a few years now.
Well, I think you'd have to ask the question, who provides and how are these things provided, like soup kitchens and cooperatives and so forth? You can cooperate all you want, but does that, and I can say categorically, it doesn't create 1 cent of money. So how are you going to get access to these soup kitchens? How is the soup kitchen going to get access to the food? How are you going to do anything?
Yeah, we're ending up again with the access to money for the very survival of, in short term.
That's all there is. Yeah. There's only one method by which we access any survival or mechanism or necessity.
Yeah. I just wanted to put that up front here for all the listeners and other critiques, people who have some valuable thoughts maybe to contribute, that this is often neglected in discussions. It is pretended as if we could do as we like, you know.
Yeah, well, it is. It's obviously, somehow or other, a difficult concept to grasp.
Yeah.
The denial of access.
It's shocking. And it's hurting a lot of people on the planet, Ben. But maybe, that's another topic.
Maybe they don't want to actually realize that concept. As you say, it hurts. And it's shocking.
Well, let's get on to the article which you recently published on your blog, OH2HEC, H-E-C-K, spelled .wordpress.com, the web address for anybody who wants to go there right now. And I would like to launch a first question. Can you please explain a little bit more in detail how the arms industry seemed so important to national economies? For example, say the involvement of added non-armament industries and other things of the civilian utilitarian production.
Well, the civilian production, what I call a domestic market, and domestic manufacturing, production of all kinds, actually supports armament production. You can't have one without the other, obviously. So it's more than just the industry that actually produces the arms. It's just about every industry in an industrial armament-producing country, such as the United States, Russia, France, Germany. You could mention several, Britain and so forth. Great arms producers. So the question was...
Why do they seem to be so important to the national economies? Original question.
Yes, well, they are important because they are probably, along with one or two others, a major source of export profit.
And that's really the essential bit, is the export part.
Well, without the export...
For the economies to survive.
Yes, the domestic market cannot be support itself.
Yeah.
It must have export. And armaments require certain conditions in other parts of the world, like conflict. The absolute requirement for that, for sales of arms to other countries. So that's armament export will actually support your domestic market. So I don't know much more of what you would say about that. I think that most of those economies would fall apart, Martin, if they had no export market for their armaments. You pull that armament production, you wind it back, you don't have to wind it back to very much, and you will find that you're headed for an economic disaster.
This is a short description of the planet's war map. Algeria, Mauritania, Mali, southern Libya, Niger, Chad, Somalia, Ethiopia, Congo/Rwanda are all presently major conflict zones in Africa. Colombia, Guatemala, and Honduras are the new world conflicts. The Middle East seems like one permanent conflict zone with variable intensity and a variable number of involved countries. Further east, Afghanistan, Pakistan, northern Myanmar, and southern Philippines account for Asia. But Eastern Europe and Russia also have their respective conflicts. Presently, there are no open armed conflicts in Australia, Canada, Western Europe, but the Arctic and Antarctica are both already subject to fierce claims and counterclaims by several above-mentioned countries. So, there are enough examples to show the current situation provides ample evidence of war being very popular. Major C.H., I don't even know what that stands for, Douglas. He's well known on YouTube, and other peace groups and peace movements have contacted him, or he's involved. He states that we are permanently at war, a war enforced in our economy by financial needs and occasionally, when required, taking a military form. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts on that question go straight to, in the case of, say, the arms-producing industry in the United States, it goes straight to the CIA. Now, wars have to be fostered. They have to be actually a part of the arms export industry. You have to foment a war somewhere. A civil conflict is the order of the day, as you very well know. And this is done by what they used to call agent provocateurs. And that sort of thing is fostered to the point where one faction within an economy, usually a third world economy, is in conflict, deadly conflict in the end, with the other faction, and they need arms. So with your mates in Germany or France, they can supply one side and the US supplies another side. Or in some cases, the US supplies both sides with armaments. It sounds, well, I think it sounds very cute, the whole idea. You know, all you have to do is foment a war and you've got export sales of armaments. Our big industry. And so they're my thoughts on it straight away. We have...
But there's another aspect to that.
Well, there is.
Which and means it, that it, even without the military shape form of war, we are at war all the time.
Well, as he said, we are at war...
How do we understand that?
Well, we are at war within our economy because our present financial system actually demands that we compete with each other because... You know, finance is so scarce. And you have to fight within your own nation against your own people and all this sort of thing. But it's all kept very gentlemanly on the surface. I think what he means there that we're at war within our culture. Our culture is actually built on what I call a competitive, conflicting type of culture. It's built on whoever is best at can beat the other fellow, what business can actually overtake the other business, put them out of business or amalgamate with them. You've heard it all before. That's how it operates.
And that's what Major Douglas means with...
Well, that's what he means there.
Yeah.
But there was another thought on the media. And media plays a very big part in fermenting war or conflict within any foreign country. And when you say foreign, I mean third world country or other than the arms producer country. You have the absolute need for your survival as an industry to actually produce an armed conflict or the threat. That's the best case scenario. The threat of war will cause you to up your sales or export of arms. But the other thought is this. The arms producer, though, this is another point, is not thinking arms and destruction or anything else. As long as they can buy them, we can make what? A profit.
Mm.
That's all that interest...
Which is the real reason for the whole thing.
The real interest... Right back to the basic interest you've got to look at. Well, why are they doing this? Why are they fermenting a war? It's not political. It's nothing to do with culture. It's nothing to do with anything other than
any of that.
Profit.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with religion, certainly. So you've got several avenues of thought that you could go down.
I don't like, sort of backstabbing my fellow left-wing songwriters on stage or off stage. But there's a great songwriter from Canada named Bruce Coburn. But Bruce Coburn has written at least three of my favorite songs. And then he went to visit his brother in Afghanistan, who's a medic. And that's fine. Everybody needs medics. But then he was interviewed by the Canadian media in Afghanistan and said glowing things about the occupation of Afghanistan, which was shocking to me and to other people. He's not really well known in the U.S., so it didn't make the U.S. media, but everybody in Canada is talking about it. And so I wrote this song for Bruce Coburn, which, you know, probably only works if you know Bruce Coburn's music. I'm guessing several of you do, and, you know, maybe the rest of you will like the song anyway, or maybe you'll all walk out. I don't know. The Twin Towers came down in 2001. Bush said Bin Laden must pay for what he'd done. The Taliban offered to turn him over to a court. The USA said to them, "We'll have nothing short of an imperial invasion by imperial command. We'll bomb your villages, steal your land. Your children can cower in fear just before they die as the comets of Kandahar are streaming through the sky." Overthrow your government and put there in its place a kleptocratic oil man, a national disgrace, who can bleed your country dry, make sure your people pay, while we kill innocent civilians every single day with missile strikes from above the clouds and F-33. And we'll call it liberation. We'll call it democracy. We'll send the death squads out to kill you if you dare to question why, as the comets of Kandahar are screaming through the sky. As your nation crumbles, as the rubble turns to dust, as the Russian tanks and helicopters blacken with the rust, as the children die and their parents take up arms to defend their dignity, their religion, their cities and their farms, Canadian crusaders will meet the fate of ages, facing men who say of them, as the battle rages, if I had a rocket launcher, some son of a bitch would die as the comets of Kandahar are screaming through the sky.
I wonder where this need for the prophet really comes from. You mentioned scarcity, but how does it actually come into existence?
Well, actually, what if I read from a little bit from the article, just a couple of little paragraphs. I state that if profit is not or cannot be made, the goods and services that have been created become worthless. They cannot be accessed, even if they're sorely needed. Financial profit alone gives us access to goods and services. No money, no profit means no access to anything. Banks chartered to create finance from a customer's asset offer their financial products in the hope of making profit. Both lender and borrower, the two human elements that bring new money into existence, must be able to profit or they cease to be viable. The borrower, in expectation of profit himself, presents an existing asset or a viable idea as an asset to the banker, who, in the expectation of profit, again, creates and lends the finance product out of the customer's security. So I think that gives you an idea of the importance of profit in our economy, without which you go broke. Let's put it simply.
We won't have any money.
You won't get any money. Now,
No money for anything, actually. No.
Well, there would be no money. The only money in existence that is new money, that is money that has been created out of asset and loaned into existence, that's the only money there is. There's another aspect to that money, which is profit, which means you can get to keep that bit and somebody else has to return whatever has been borrowed plus the cost, which is the interest and so forth.
And the scarcity is the result of the costs always outstripping the availability of money in the marketplace to purchase. No?
Oh, the cost just
runs
on
and
on.
From any given money creation, the result is a deficit. No?
Yeah, it's absolutely correct.
That's what a lot of people don't seem to understand, that this is inherent.
Unless that point is grasped at the beginning, what else follows is like a puzzle. Well, why are we doing these things?
Yeah.
Why is it necessary for us to have wars, to exploit everything in existence, including each other? All that becomes a bit of a mystery. So I do think that right at the beginning of getting an understanding of the problems we all share on this planet at the moment is how money that we have does that to us. And it does that to us because the way we create it makes it more expensive than the money we borrow. So we're always actually have to borrow more to pay the cost of what we've borrowed. Mm. Of course, makes it impossible unless you just keep on borrowing. And, of course, we're always behind the eight ball, which is a cliche, but it rings true in this instance. So we all are beholden to profit. Unless we make a profit out of what has been borrowed, we don't get to keep any of it. And we only get to keep it at the expense of somebody else. So they're really...
Because their assets might be jeopardized.
Everything. Yeah. And, of course, money becomes less and less valuable as time goes on. So you need more money to cover the cost. Mm. It seems like more money. You just need more digits to cover the cost.
It's more a technical thing, really. Yeah.
You're not buying any more. It's not becoming more valuable. Mm. What could be more valuable than the necessities of life?
No, this brings me straight to my end point, which might give us listeners a little bit of an outlook towards where we're heading perhaps next with some publication, perhaps, which is the environment. We're also almost declaring an adversary in many ways, aren't we?
Well, yes.
And isn't there the scarcity in similar ways at work?
Adversary is a good word for just about any other aspect of our environment. But the environment itself becomes, nature becomes an adversary, simply because to make a profit, you must exploit whatever it is. Everything must be exploited in the end, because you have to make more than you borrowed. Keep going back to that, some reason or other, a little quirk of nature, the message might get through, we must make a profit to get any access to anything. So exploitation means this, that we have to make money to make a profit. We have to make a profit out of every aspect of our lives, including the environment itself, to the point where we are actually destroying it, and we can't stop doing that if we want to survive in the short term. We must continue to do what we're doing unless we address back to the problem again of how money is created.
And replace this method with something.
And replace with...
workable. Huh?
With a sane method. And out of that, you may end up with a sane society.
I wanted to thank you for today's contribution to my listeners and everyone here around who listens to NIM-FM. Thank you very much, Graham.
Oh, you're very welcome. We'll have a chat anytime, Mark.
Well, all set. As I announced, the wordpress.com.au blog of Graham, and I spell it to you once more again, it's ohheck.wordpress.com.au, all in small letters, and type it into the address bar, as Google and others don't know this URL yet. We heard Tanya, Graham, David Rovics, various media samples, electronica from Krüder Dorfmeister, coffee and haiku. Check out Kaput Radio number 244 for details about the quoted financial method if you're interested. That and this show are all available at radio4all.net. That is radio number 4all.net. Go to the Sirius page, go to Kaput X Radio, and all shows are listed. My name is Martin. I will be thinking hard what to do next, but I'm sure there will be another podcast coming. Catch you all then again. Bye.